Something like that. Well, on the car coming to the conference today, I was talking to people about what high dimensional means, and maybe it means that P is bigger than N, and perhaps it means that it's the high dimensional is where the cursive dimensionality kicks in which case I would presume from Jawa's talk this morning that in the parameter space it kicks in dimension 2. I know from some students that maybe dimension 1 is a challenge for them to begin with, so that's where high dimensionality is. Today I'm going to start in an infinite number of dimensions and immediately reduce to a smaller number of dimensions. And I'm not going to tell you how I do much of the transition from one to the other, but you'll see the examples I have in mind. This is image analysis, and let's try this. It's image analysis, and in particular, a landmark analysis and the shape analysis of images using landmarks. So I'll begin by discussing landmarks. We start with images, and what we are interested in doing is studying images or objects, and we're interested in studying the shapes of the images or the shapes of the objects that we have, with the intention of doing statistical analysis on the shapes themselves. And the idea is to begin by selecting a set of points. So if you think of an object or an image as infinite dimensional in practical terms, you immediately try and get it down to a finite number of dimensions and a reasonably small number of dimensions by selecting a set of points on the object or image called landmarks. And this is, in many ways, is just a kind of vectorization of the image or object. And then if you have d-dimensional images, say, and you select a collection of n landmarks, then you have vectors, you basically have a information in Rn cross d as the way of summarizing what you see in the image. And landmarks, of course, it sounds a bit mysterious that you're just going to choose points on an image or an object, but landmarks can be chosen by an expert or perhaps by some simple heuristic procedure, and that might include various computer algorithms which might do it for you automatically. So let's consider an expert. Here we have a scan of someone's head and someone's mouth in particular, an x-ray, say, and what we want to do is we want to summarize the shape information in for, say, a study of orthodontics. You want to summarize the shape information associated with the mouth. And an expert has gone through and selected some very special points in the image that the expert considers to be important for orthodontics, and those represent the set of landmarks for the image. The lines that you see here are purely an artifact for the image. They're there simply to make it easier for you to see what the points are and the geometry of the points. Here's another example where an expert has chosen some landmarks. This is an idealized picture of a cervical vertebra of a gorilla. And the landmarks have only been chosen on one side on the assumption, perhaps a crude assumption, that the gorillas all have symmetrical vertebrae. And this is supposed to be, in fact, the fifth cervical vertebra of a particular gorilla. And all these abbreviations here that you see, they are all abbreviations for various wonderful technical terms that people in anthropology and zoology know all about. So there are, in this study, there were two subspecies of gorilla, and the interest was to determine whether or not there are any systematic shape differences between the fifth cervical vertebrae of one subspecies and the other. And then you can choose landmarks by a simple heuristic procedure. This particular example here is an example of some Iron Age brooches from what is now Switzerland. And I don't know, maybe some of you have seen these brooches. If you go to various curiosity shops where they sell old artifacts dug up and sold probably in a rather shady way on the market, You'll find that Iron Age brooches are actually quite a common thing to find in such curiosity shops, along with those little Egyptian statues. These are in fact a side and a top view of such brooches. What has been done here is that each brooch shape has been represented by a tetrahedron by selecting landmarks on extremal points in the case of each brooch. What's the aim of such an analysis? Basically, we'd be interested in examining the shapes of objects or images to cluster them into groups, to perform perhaps a discriminant analysis where you want to decide how to classify something by beginning with a training sample and then taking a new item and trying to decide which of various shape clusters or shape groups it belongs to. You might be interested in testing a hypothesis between two groups to determine whether they have systematic shape differences. So, for example, in the case of the fifth cervical vertebrae of gorilla subspecies, we have two samples here. They're quite small samples compared to the dimensionality of the landmarks. But as you can see, we can compare the top group, GGB. Those are the vertebrae of gorillas, which are mountain gorillas. You may know the mountain gorilla from the work of Diane Fossey, who particularly specialized in working with mountain gorillas. And they're a very rare type of gorilla, the rarest of the subspecies of gorilla. And the GGG gorillas are, in fact, probably the most common gorilla, I understand. They're the ones you see in the zoos, if you see gorillas in zoos at all. This is the western lowland gorilla that is the most common type. And the question here is to determine whether or not there's any difference in the shapes of the fifth cervical vertebrae. And the reason that primatologists are interested in this is because of the relationship of the shape of that vertebra to the various theories of locomotion for gorillas, and how they walk and how they move on all fours. So now, having constructed a set of landmarks, one wants to do analysis, and so we need to talk about how to coordinatize all this. So how do we go about doing that? Well, suppose that we have a set chosen from, let's just take one image right now, a set on one image of n landmarks, and the image is in d dimensions. Typically we have the idea that d is equal to 2 or 3 for our practical examples, but there's nothing to stop you considering other dimensions here. So what we do is we arrange these vectors into a matrix of coordinates in a rather obvious fashion, and we say that the configuration matrix is defined as simply the collection xij, where we have an n by d matrix of coordinates based upon the selected landmarks. Now, here's the first challenge, having selected a set of landmarks. Not all of the geometrical information in the landmarks is relevant. So what we want to do is we want to select out that information in the landmarks which is particularly of geometrical relevance. For example, landmarks will be determined by a coordinate system that we choose for our image, and that coordinate system is quite artificial and arbitrary from the point of view of statistical analysis. So in many configuration matrices, we're not concerned with the information about the location and the orientation of the configuration. We want to, in some sense, remove that from the analysis. Another way of putting that is that the statistical methods we wish to use should be invariant under any common transformation of the landmarks by an isometry of the space RD, which is the space in which the actual landmarks are chosen from the image or object. So here is a basic definition. Let's suppose we have two configuration matrices, X and Y are the two matrices. We'll say that they have the same size and shape if there is an isometry from RD back to RD, which takes corresponding landmarks. So the isometry is tau, and it takes corresponding landmarks from one to the other. This is a single isometry of d-dimensional space, so that xi is mapped to yi for all values of I from 1 up to n. Now, by an isometry, I simply mean a rigid motion. And that can be understood in two ways. I mean, for example, I can have a orientation-preserving rigid motion, or I can also have one that doesn't preserve orientations. It might have a reflection involved. Whether you want the isometries to include reflections or not is just a matter of taste, depending upon your individual needs and your particular application. So that leads to the idea of the shape, the size and shape class of a configuration matrix. When two matrices, two configuration matrices of landmarks have the same size and shape according to the definition I just gave you, then we write that X is X tilde Y, let's say. And you'll recognize from the notation that what we are defining here is an equivalence relation on the set of all configuration matrices. So we can write the equivalence class of all configuration matrices Y with the same size and shape as X as, let us say, S of X here, this notation. Now, another way of writing that is to simply say S of X is the set of all Y such that Y is equivalent to X under the size and shape equivalency. Now, this is just an equivalence class. So the idea would be that you start with a set of configuration matrices, and then you reduce it to a set of equivalence classes. An equivalence class is, of course, a very abstract object because it is an element is basically a collection of, it's a set. It's a collection of things that have been identified with each other. And as a set, it's not a particularly sensible object in which to do statistical analysis. So we need to turn something which is an equivalence class into something involving coordinates, because that's what statisticians like to work with when they do statistics. So we come now to the idea of size and shape coordinates. I want to talk about, first of all, about a very simple idea that is due to Colin Goodall and Kenty Mardia in 1992, and also in 1993, and they proposed a representation, a coordinate representation of the size and shape of landmark configurations, and they did it by using lower triangular matrices and the QR factorization, which I want to talk about. So the idea is you want to take a configuration matrix and you want to remove location and orientation information, because these are associated with artifacts of the coordinate system in which you represent the data. So we assume to begin with that the landmarks are in general position. That is, that no three landmarks are in a straight line. There are no collinearities, no four in some common plane. There are no coplanarities or anything like that. And in general, no subset of M lies in some common M minus 2 flat. So that's what we mean here when we say that the landmarks are in general position. Now, how do we remove location? Well, removing location is something that statisticians do all the time. We know how to do that, and we know how to do it well. I'll do it in a rather unnatural way here. In a sense, it's not particularly symmetric. But I'll come back to that issue a little later on. To remove location, we choose the coordinate system so that one of the landmarks, let's say X1, is at the origin. We just shift the landmarks and we move it so X1 is at the origin. Equivalently, we can subtract the first row of X from all the other N minus 1 rows. So that just is equivalent to shifting to the origin. And then since we've subtracted the first row of X from the other N minus 1 rows, the first row now becomes just zeros, so we can throw that row away, and we now have a N minus 1 by D matrix which has that first row subtracted off. And this is called the pre-size and shape matrix of the configuration. We've basically removed location information from the data. Now, the harder challenge is to remove orientation. So we take X tilde, which is the pre-size and shape matrix, and we want to remove orientation information. So what we do is we perform what's called a QR factorization on the pre-size and shape matrix, which is basically writing the matrix as the product of two matrices. The gamma of X is a D by D special orthogonal matrix, in other words, a generalized rotation. And the remaining matrix there in the factorization is S of X. Notice the duplication of notation. And that is an N minus 1 by D lower triangular matrix. And the matrix S of X in the good or Mardia coordinate system is a coordinate representation of the size and shape of X. So here is a picture of such a lower triangular matrix. This is lower triangular in the generalized sense. It's not necessarily a square matrix. Typically, we would have here n greater than d in this particular case. And it's lower triangular in the sense that all the non-zero elements are on or below the diagonal F11 to FDD, which is that main diagonal there, and they're all lying down there. And because the matrix is in general position, the result of all this is done in such a way that all of the elements along the main diagonal there are all strictly positive elements. So to give you a picture of how this coordinate representation works, let's take three landmarks, which are represented by this triangle here in this upper corner. So to remove location information, we essentially shift the triangle so that the first landmark lies at the origin. And then the second transformation removes orientation information. And so you go down to this picture down here to see what the lower triangular matrix looks like. It gives you essentially a rotation of that triangle about the point, the landmark at the origin, so that the second landmark now lies on the positive x-axis, and the third landmark lies somewhere out in space. And the way you think of this is that you have one coordinate now associated with the second landmark because it's the positive x-coordinate, and then you have two additional coordinates associated with the third landmark, and the three coordinates there make up the entries in the lower triangular matrix. Here is another representation of the same thing, but now we have four landmarks in three dimensions. So the transformation is taking it all in one step here. We've taken the first landmark to the origin. The second landmark there has been transferred onto the x-axis in three dimensions. If you imagine this is three-dimensional space, the second landmark goes to the x-axis, a positive coordinate. The third landmark lies in the xy plane there, so it has two coordinates, and the third landmark is moved wherever it's moved by the orthogonal, special orthogonal transformation, so it has three coordinates still. And we have one, two, three entries in the lower triangular matrix, and that represents the coordinatization of the size and the shape of the original tetrahedron of landmarks. So how about getting rid of size if you wanted shape alone? That is, shape is what you get when you take size and shape and you throw away size. The idea would simply be to take all the entries and divide by the upper left corner, and the resulting matrix which you get, which is a matrix of ratios, would simply be then a representation of the shape of the set of landmarks. So the advantage of these coordinates for doing size and shape analysis, they provide a simple recipe for representing landmark shapes as multivariate data. And when the coordinates are represented in lower triangular matrix form, then thinking of them as multivariate data, because they are, you can simply vectorize the matrix, they may be encoded as vectors and used in standard statistical packages, whether they are R packages like R or SAS or anything else. You just generate these vectorized matrices and throw them into your package and perform this kind of analysis that you think is appropriate. The statistician who wishes to analyze shapes can then apply standard multivariate procedures in that way. Now, there's a problem with good old Mardia coordinates. The QR factorization is not symmetric in the landmark labels, and that's a problem. So statistical inference will depend upon the arbitrary labeling of vertices. So if you decide to reorder the landmarks, then you will end up getting a completely different coordinatization. And the point is that there's no simple affine transformation from one coordinatization of shape to the other coordinatization of shape. And as a result of that, a statistician using the former coordinatization, which I've got in the red, purpley red there, that statistician may reach different conclusions from the latter. You, in some senses, there's an arbitrariness about the labels. So Kendall shape coordinates represent a way of solving that sort of problem. And I want to talk about that based upon the work of original work of David Kendall, actually earlier than even 1986, 1977, Dryden and Mardia, and a couple of things that I've written there might be worth mentioning as well on this particular approach. So I want to begin by defining a scale variable of order p, which is basically a non-negative function of size and shape, which is homogeneous of order p in the matrix. So if you put in a scalar there, it multiplies out to a factor of c to the power p in that. So the idea is that you can represent size and shape as a pair, one involving shape and the other involving size through the scale variable. And the particular case where the configuration has size zero is a case where all the landmarks are coincident. In that case, we have a sort of a degenerate configuration of size and shape, which I represent by star in that particular case. So we can represent size and shape space as a shape space, Cartesian product with the positive real axis, the set of scale variables, either that or a collection of degenerate shapes there. And how does that look? That looks like this. This is a cone. You can think of size and shape space as a cone where the cross sections have all common size, and schematically they just differ in shape. And if you go up and down, you have various values for the size variable, and you have a collection of at the very apex of the cone, you have a collection of coincident landmarks. So the Kendall geometry of size and shape space works like this. We need to put metrics on these two spaces, shape space and size and shape spaces. On size and shape space, we use a matching metric by just simply minimizing the distance. I'm going to take this off. Minimizing the distance between x and z, and over all possible values of z, with the property that s of z is equal to s of y. That's basically taking one set of landmarks and trying to match it as closely as possible to another set, and letting the difference between those be the matching distance, the matching metric between the two. And as a scale variable, you might just simply take all isometries of the configuration and just minimize the Frobenius norm and that sort of thing. This is multiple. It's simply a multiple of the trace of the landmark covariance matrix in that particular case. And then you can get a shape space as the intersection of size and shape space with the set where the scale variable is equal to 1. So then the shape space inherits the metric as a subspace of size and shape space. Here's a picture of what this looks like in a rather famous case that everybody who's ever heard me talk about shape has seen something like this. This is a shape space of triangle shapes. It's triangle shapes in two dimensions, so sigma 2, 3, or 3, 2. And you have to think of this as this is a sphere, And every point on the sphere represents a triangle shape. So at the north pole of the sphere is the triangle shape corresponding to an equilateral triangle. And on the south pole of the sphere is also another equilateral triangle, but with the orientation of the landmarks switched around to the other orientation. And what I've drawn here is, in fact, the combination of two lines of longitude going in a great circle all the way from the north pole to the south pole of the sphere of triangle shapes. And these are all isosceles triangles in the picture, where there's a single angle, which is the isosceles angle. Of course, as you can well imagine, there are three such great circles meeting each other at 60 degree angles, corresponding to the three possible isosceles triangles. They all, of course, meet at the north and south pole, where every angle is an isosceles angle. There it is again, that same picture, the same great circle. But you'll notice, of course, that there's also an equator, which any line of longitude must hit as it goes from the north pole to the south pole. The equator is seen here. I've tipped it on the sphere on its side, and there's the equator, now seen from the side. This corresponds to a collection of collinear triangles, a degenerate case where all the landmarks are in a straight line. And there are six identified points, three of which correspond to collinear triangles with one point, the midpoint between the other two, and also three triangles where the collinearity is caused by two landmarks being coincident with each other. So the statistical analysis of size and shape, I spent a long time talking about coordinates and geometry. What about analysis? Well, there are two ways. In good old Mardia coordinates, we encode size and shape as vectors. So, and then we apply standard multivariate methods. As I discussed earlier, this distorts the nonlinear geometry of shape. So we look for something in Kendall geometry as an alternative. In Kendall geometry, we look for analogs of various multivariate statistical tools that are appropriate for the geometry of the particular shape manifold that we're working with. For example, in ordinary multivariate analysis, you work with Euclidean distance, or you work with a squared Euclidean distance. And in the case of Kendall geometry, you work with geodesic distance. Similarly, you can replace the centroid by the Fréchet mean as an alternative. So I want to then just give you an idea then of a quick sample, two sample tests that will finish this off then for shape differences. Here we have the cervical vertebrae again, and the most prominent shape differences between the two subspecies are the question at issue. It looks as if it may be at the top of each configuration. And the question is it significant? And we ran a test that I'm not going to be able to show you much in the way of details on, but it's essentially a permutation test. This is the geodesic distance in the shape space of sigma 7.2, which is a Fubini-Studi metric on a complex projective space. And the result of this is really rather encouraging. We found in this particular example, simply by doing a permutation test, that with the number of times that the simulated value was bigger than the observed value, was only 0.07% of the cases, so significant in that sense. So that gives you an idea of how we use this in these analyses. And there are some references, and you can find all these slides on my homepage, easily accessible. So thank you very much.
Landmark matrix, yes. And just sample principal components of that. Would that not give you some way of summarizing shape and size?
Absolutely, you can do.
And how does that compare to the Kendall?
Well, it's closer. It's not done to compare to the Kendall because it doesn't deal with the issue of instability. For example, with the principal component analysis, if you have perfect symmetry, like you have something which has rotational symmetry, you can have instability there.
Yeah.
Right? So this is what happens with the good old Mardia coordinates. They're unstable. They break the natural geometry. They're unstable. So they have that similar sort of problem to what you're just suggesting has been used. It has similar problems to the good old Mardia.
Yeah. basic view is covariance matrix here. What do you mean by the standard normal? For example, some probably mentioned about this critical component, like factor analysis.
Well, I mean, for example, whatever you want to do. I mean, if you have two samples, if you turn your data, your size and shape data into, or your shape data into multivariate data, you might do a simple two-sample test of significance using a Hotel and p-square, right? That sort of thing. I mean, those sorts of things, whatever you want to do, whatever your particular problem is, this is simply a way of transferring your data into a multivariate setting so that you can do an analysis on a more routine way.
Right. I'm more at a more elementary level of understanding this covariance matrix. What do you mean by covariance in that
I'm not quite sure which context you're thinking of. The size variable? That's where I mentioned the covariance matrix.
Okay, you're talking about size variables.
Right.
I see.
I mentioned there that the size variable for the landmarks in the particular Kendall geometry is, in fact, a non-normalized covariance matrix. Trace of a covariance matrix.